is United States against Hernandez-Sandoval. Mr. Frankel.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Scott Frankel, and I represent the defendant appellant, Mr. Yessi Ivan Hernandez-Sandoval. This is an appeal that addresses the district court's guideline calculations. The defendant disagreed with the district court's guideline calculations, raised a number of objections which were overruled, and received a sentence ultimately of 140 months. As I pointed out in the brief, if the defendant had won his objections, or at least the objections that we raised in our brief, his guideline range would have been substantially lower, 97 to 121 months. The defendant was given a two-point enhancement for obstruction under Guideline 3C1.1 because he lied about his true identity until it was discovered by the government while the case was still pending. Our objection below was based on the application note 5A to Guideline 3C1.1, which specifically lists conduct not covered by the enhancement. And it says providing a false name or identification document at arrest, except where such conduct actually resulted in a significant hindrance to the investigation or prosecution of the incident offense, is not covered. In addition, Application Note 6 states that the enhancement applies only when the defendant provides materially false information. So the defendant did lie about his identity and maintained that lie throughout the case until the government uncovered his true identity. But his lie did not in any way impede the prosecution of the case. At the time of the defendant's arrest, the government had everything it needed to prosecute him. They basically had set up a confidential informant to deliver drugs to him. The transaction was witnessed and observed by agents, and everything was audio recorded. The defendant was arrested. There was a bond hearing. He maintained his false identity at the bond hearing, but then he, other than being accurate and truthful about his identity, he complied with all the terms and conditions of his bond. He maintained contact with the pretrial services office. He appeared for court as required.
What period of time stretched out while he's complying with his bond?
I believe it was a couple of years that the case was pending.
And if they knew his real name, that wouldn't have happened, would it?
No. Likely, he probably would have. I'm almost certain that if he had given them his real name, he would have stayed in custody. Because he was not legally in the country. So that's where the argument could be made by the government that he did impede the prosecution of the case. However, I think it works in his favor that he did not flee. He's a Mexican citizen. He was facing the enormous consequences of this criminal case.
And every time he went back to Mexico, he came back right away.
Pardon me, Your Honor?
He didn't stay in Mexico very long.
As far as I don't know if he ever went to Mexico, but I know that he was residing in Texas.
Well, wherever he went, he was not, just because he didn't flee, where's he going to go?
He could have returned.
He was doing real well by hanging around, actually.
He was facing the enormous consequences of this case, which actually ultimately came to pass. He was a citizen
of... Retracted while on bond,
right?
He benefited because, frankly, he knew once he got caught, he was going to be putting in some serious time.
I agree with you that he did benefit by being on bond and remaining in the United States during that entire period of time, but I don't think that he obstructed justice according to the guideline by impeding hindering the investigation or prosecution of the case. I think the guideline's pretty clear. The words it uses are pretty clear, and I don't think that that happened in this instant. The government cited to the case of Bedolla Zavala, 611 F3rd 392. The case involves a defendant who gave a false identity, and then by the time he was fingerprinted, and there was a bond hearing. The true identity was already discovered, and then he was given the obstruction enhancement. The government argues that case is similar to this one because there someone gave the false identity. It was discovered, and arguably there was no obstruction because it was discovered before the case even started to proceed. In our case, though, I think we have the mitigating factor that the defendant was on bond and didn't go anywhere and cooperated in a sense with the prosecution of the case by not fleeing, by staying in contact with pretrial services and his attorney and showing up for court as required.
How does that undo the obstructive effect of giving the false name at the bond hearing and securing release on that basis?
Well, because I think that if he's not obstructing the prosecution of the case while he's on...
Well, by definition, securing a favorable bail decision obstructs the prosecution of the case based on false identity information. I mean, I think that just goes without saying, but it's not undone by the fact that he doesn't thereby become a fugitive.
If you look at the terms of the guidelines, he didn't hinder or impede the prosecution of the case. The government had everything it needed to prosecute the case, and he didn't do anything to undermine the prosecution of the case, which was the drug delivery that he was arrested and charged with. And so under the terminology of the guidelines, I would say that there has not been an obstruction in that term. Yes, he lied. He got in the way of the government in by denying who he truly was and making it possible for him to remain on bond even though he was illegal in this country, but he did not hinder or impede the prosecution of his case, which was the drug case. And they had everything they needed to get a conviction on this case, and they ultimately didn't. The other issue that we addressed in our brief is whether the defendant accepted responsibility, and this comes down to an interpretation of what the defendant told the government and told the judge. Even though the government was not satisfied with the information that he told them, the defendant did admit his involvement in the case. He did come clean. He did admit to the court as part of his plea agreement his true identity. He admitted that he had been sent to the rendezvous point to conduct a drug transaction where he was picking up the drugs. He didn't give the government or the court additional information about the true identity of the people who had sent him, and he didn't give the court or the government any information about where he was going to take the drugs. But what he did give was sufficient to accept responsibility, and and I believe that he qualified under the statute, even in this particular case, which requires that there be some kind of extraordinary acceptance responsibility, because he was on bond for so long. He didn't flee the jurisdiction, and in our position, he didn't hinder or impede the prosecution of the case against him. I see the yellow light is on. I'm going to reserve the remaining time, unless anybody has any questions for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Frankel. Mr. Fullerton.
May it please the court. The district court did not err in any way in sentencing Mr. Sandoval. He properly assessed the obstruction of justice enhancement, properly denied the acceptance of responsibility reduction. Mr. Sandoval's lies were not simply the kind of opportunistic lies or impulsive lies upon arrest that qualify or they come under that portion of Section 5A of the Application Notes of 3C1.1 that are exempt from or may be exempt from the obstruction of justice enhancement. This was the kind of lie that was not simply impulsive at the time of arrest, but was persisted in at his initial appearance, at his arraignment, the pre-sentence, pretrial services officer, in fact, to his lawyer and to the district court for a lengthy period of time. It was over 3 years after his arrest before Mr. Sandoval was then, his bond was revoked in September of 2012 and brought back before the district court, and his true identity was revealed and he admitted it. That's just not the type of impulsive, opportunistic lying about who you are upon arrest that can evade the instruction of justice enhancement. It was a material lie because Mr. Sandoval was not a United States citizen. He had been previously removed from the United States some 6 or 7 times by my count, both voluntarily and involuntarily. And his reentry into the United States after deportation or removal, of course, is another federal offense. So not only was his lie material in obtaining bond, allowing his release prior to trial, but also it was material in the sense that it could potentially, if believed, have avoided other criminal consequences, namely the illegal reentry after deportation. So it was material. It was not simply opportunistic. It went on for a long time. The obstruction enhancement clearly applies. And as for acceptance of responsibility, there was really nothing extraordinary about Mr. Sandoval's plea of guilty or acceptance of responsibility in this case. I quoted the portion of the plea transcript in which Mr. Sandoval gives a factual basis for his guilt in this case. And I believe it's basically one sentence. It's a very grudging, minimal admission that he was involved with attempted possession of drugs with the intent to distribute them. He said he didn't know what kind of drugs it was and he didn't know where they were going, but he was guilty of that. That combined with simply not fleeing and reporting to court when required just doesn't amount to extraordinary acceptance of responsibility, and the district court did not err in denying him that reduction.
Was there any monitoring of him during his being out on bond, occasionally coming back to court or being checked on? I'm just curious what he did for 3 years, 3.5 years.
Are you asking whether it was electronic monitoring, Judge?
Yeah, well,
I'm not aware of...
You know, when he's not a citizen, he doesn't have a job, we assume he's not back in the drug business or doing something, but for 3.5 years he's staying out, and that normally, you really got to either keep your nose clean or he was just lucky, I don't know, maybe.
I'm not aware of any violations on his part during his pretrial release.
The monitoring, because if obviously by not having, he wasn't a, with his name that wasn't familiar, we'll call it that way, that he was not under any kind of suspicion that he was going to do anything else, seems to me.
For all I know, I just don't know. I'm not aware of any violations that happened under the name of Adrian Payan. Okay? Now,
what do they have to do typically to check in during this pretrial monitoring phase? What do defendants in this status pretrial have to do to comply with monitoring? Do they just have to phone the probation office periodically, or what?
Well, there's a pretrial services officer that would be monitoring him. If there were conditions of reporting or conditions of electronic monitoring, that sort of thing, the pretrial services officer would, from Chicago, would arrange with the pretrial services officer in the district of, I believe he went to El Paso.
Right.
There would be periodic monitoring there.
Right. I mean, I guess it's a mystery how he was able to keep up the charade if there was actually any sort of substantive monitoring going on.
But yeah. The record shows that Mr. Sandoval had purchased the identity of Adrian Payan sometime prior to his arrest. It must have been a good identity because he was able to evade detection into his true identity for all that time. So we'd ask that you affirm the judgment of the sentence, the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. And we thank you, Mr. Frankel, for your willingness to accept the appointment in this case. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.